All right, everybody, hopefully you can hear me okay. Turned it up just a smidge. There we go. So I'm live, and it's the Ham Palace. Thanks for coming back, listening. This is a live one. This is, I'm going to be going solo today. It's Wednesday. It's a beautiful Wednesday. It's mid-afternoon. And going to be talking about a few things. One of them's the Flash. Little Flash review. A few other things. If anyone has any questions or anyone wants to chime in by text, let me know. And I'll answer them. First come, first serve. But otherwise, I'm just going to be doing a Flash review. But first, before I get to that, prayers for the poor people that are in this missing sub that went down to visit the Titanic. I don't know, did you guys hear about this? It's the sub, I guess it was $2,400 or something to go down. And supposedly they were trained on this thing. And go check out the Titanic, which is really deep in the ocean, in the Atlantic Ocean. Not too far off from Nova Scotia there. But actually a little far off, pretty far off, some miles. And now they're down there, and it's missing. So, of course, your imagination goes all over the place. I'm thinking, well, what happened? It could be anything from they're stuck in some debris around Titanic. It could be some crazy current took them out, that their little meager motor things couldn't handle. And the thing with this little submarine, it's not that, it doesn't seem that powerful, like the motors on it that make it go. I guess you gotta be pretty powerful to go underwater that deep, but from what they make it sound, it's like the motors, like, they're not really that strong. They're like little fins or something. But anyway, this thing could have got stuck on something down there, or worse, you know, there's a lot of unknown stuff in the water that we have not investigated fully. Who knows? There's reports of all sorts of creatures. I hope to God it's not anything so gruesome like that. But it is, your imagination goes all over the place. And with all the UFO stuff and the missing 411, I hope it's not that either. But, either way, it all sucks. It's all terrible. So prayers for the people. They only got about probably less than 20 hours of oxygen. And they're sending some people over right now, I think from England or whatever, which I don't understand that. Like, why don't you send somebody from Nova Scotia, some ships? They're closer. And they're also saying, well, how are we going to get down there? They're so deep. Well, you find a way. You get some kind of deep, it could be something, okay, you send a little whatever down there, a robotic drone, see where they're at. Once you see where they're at, you send some kind of submergible claw or some kind of cable that could unhook them if they're caught, at the very least. Some kind of capsule that they can decompress. But I don't know. It is a tough one. But, I mean, think about it. They could send a plane over there and, like, land the plane, one of those, those water planes where they land on the water or whatever, and send some stuff down there. I don't know. But it seems like it's so far away, the ship. I guess, I don't know what the reports are, but the ship that's from England maybe has deep sea stuff. Yeah, because they actually need a machine that's like that to go down there, I would guess. But it's terrible. I mean, there's no backup contraptions that they installed on it to tell people where they were exactly. It just seems like there's a lot of safety measures that they didn't prep. And if you're going to do something, you have to have backup safety measures. This is like, it's almost as bad as the Titanic, you know, with all the things they didn't prep for. And it's you know, did we not learn the lesson the first time? Apparently not. So yeah, that's my rant. That's Hambo's rant on that. And it's sad. You hate to see this. You're in a cramped, you know, you're in a tight space in a sub. Who wants to die that way? It's like, it's terrible. And you run out of oxygen. Ay-yi-yi. But they said, the latest report said there's some kind of noise that they heard that fixed their location a little bit. I don't know who heard it or whatever the deal is. But anyway, it's terrible. So if you could send some good vibes and say a prayer for those people. So with that terrible news, I'll go into my flash review. Flash review. Maybe it'll be done in a flash. I don't know. This was a good film. There's a lot of mixed reviews out there right now. It really divides the critics. The good thing is that it's not woke-a-doke. Not really. Not trying to shove a kind of message down your throat and all that. It's just, you know, you got the Ezra Miller situation. And there are no perfect people, but man, he's not done some good things. He hasn't done anything that's very good lately. And I won't go into that on here, but it's some bad stuff. Performance-wise, he's fine. You know, he plays the part of Barry. And, you know, he knows the character a little bit. He knows how to play it. His suit looks a lot better. I really like how it looks. Especially considering the Justice League version was so, like, I don't know, wired on metal. But there's some good story stuff in this. Like, I like the flashbacks too. And there's going to be some major spoilers here. I like the flashbacks too. Man of Steel, and how they tie everything into Man of Steel, which is basically the Snyderverse. They don't go into his backstory of how they go into his story a little bit, how he gets powers, but they don't really go into it. I mean, to do the Flash right, we need a proper origin story, and him training a little bit more, being the Flash. You never really got that. You know, you just have to do it with the Flash because there's not been a proper origin since the TV show, which is great. I might actually go buy the TV show now because it's so awesome. Because John Wesley Shipp, to me, that's my Flash. I love John Wesley Shipp. He's great as Flash. It kind of starts off with this thing where the Flash is just shows up. He's got to save some babies. I mean, it just kind of goes into it. They don't mess around. There's not a lot of time being wasted in this film. And that's a good thing about it. It doesn't feel like 2.5 hours. Just because there's so much story to tell and so much ground to cover and so many characters. And so that's a positive. But there's this baby scene where he's got to save this building from falling. And he's got to jump from, I don't know what it is, debris to debris to save these babies. It's really pushing the believability. And if you haven't heard by now, CG is pretty atrocious, especially on these little babies. Now, I know you don't want to freak people out by falling babies, but you chose to have falling babies in your script. And you want that to look real, at least real as you can. And there's a cute falling dog, which I liked. I like that part. But the CG is so bad. It's like, it's silly. It comes off silly. So you want your first sequence to look really good. But even Black Adam's opening sequence looked better than that. When he comes to life. But anyway, it does its purpose. You know, it's nice. He saves everybody and he puts them all together in order, and he puts some baby in the microwave, which is, well, let's not talk about that. But anyway, I guess I just did. But, you know, he shows the lady and she freaks out. And but anyway, the whole thing hinges on, like, he wants to go back. He just, something in him stirs up a memory of his mom. You know, his mom died, and his dad is in court, going to court for see if he can get off of his charges, and he doesn't get off of his charges. So I think that's the catalyst where it's like, you know, I'm done with this. It's like, I want to go and save and undo what's been done. And that's one of the things I kind of wish they were a bit more clear performance wise that he was more angry about. You know, enough of this with, you know, my dad having to stay in jail. I want to undo this. I didn't really get that feeling from his character. I think there's some major editing going on in this movie, probably. So his motivation, he just didn't, like, what started that necessarily? I didn't really feel that. But anyway. So he goes, he just runs back in time. Like, it's no big deal. That's one of the things I kind of wish it was more of a dramatic way of going about it. They don't build that. They just kind of get right to him going back. Like, it's no big deal to go back in time. Like, now the effects and how they do it is cool. That's neat. It's creative. And all the multiple timelines and kind of like this bowl. Now he sees all these multiple timelines of all these people in his life, but it's done with really bad, maybe blatant bad CG. Apparently it's supposed to be done on purpose, but to me, if you're going to do bad CGI on purpose, why don't you just make things like a cartoon or a paper mache, like, I don't know, do things a little bit more practically or something. Something that's over the top. Yeah, I don't quite agree with the choice, but I don't know. It's just a different style of how he chose to do that. So he goes back in time and he meets another part of himself, another version of himself where his mom didn't die. You know, he's definitely, this is the slacker, annoying, Keanu Reeves type Flash. And one of the things I will say about this movie, that it's great how they're in the same scene and they interact with each other. It's pretty seamless. So that's well done. That's probably the best CG right there. but before all this, he talks to, Affleck's, Bruce Wayne, and he tells him, hey, don't, you know, probably shouldn't do that. You know, and he goes and does it anyway. And there's a whole Batman sequence at the beginning of this movie it's fun, but it's definitely all CG. It just felt like a video game, pretty much. Till you get to the end where Batman's got this kind of rope and Wonder Woman shows up to help him at the last minute, and that's fine. She's been popping up a lot and stuff, Shazam, and Batman's got the blue and gray suit, which is cool, but he's got like a bunch of gear over that for that particular street scene, I think. It looks a little weird and silly. Looks like a little wonky on him. But I like the blue and gray suit choice. I thought that was great. I'd love to see more of the blue and gray suit. So that scene was in there. And again, it's getting pretty video gamey. So we get into it. He's back in time. And he's trying to explain to his doppelganger, hey, you know, we gotta fix this or something like that. I gotta remember who do we go to fix things? And they go to you know, the Bruce Wayne in that universe, which I guess it's a parallel universe, but they make it seem like he's going back in time. So it's not very clear early on what the deal is, till they go to visit Bruce Wayne, and What I like about this, though, what I like about this is that when they go visit the mansion, that they don't visit any other part of Gotham City, really. Because I think if they did that, that would have been a lot of budget, because you got to make it look like the Tim Burton's Gotham City. So it was smart to just have the Batcave and the Gotham City, or and the mansion from that, like isolated. That was smart. I like that. The music, they used the music from Batman, which is awesome. I like that a lot. They encounter Bruce Wayne with long hair, which I kind of knew from the trailer, and he's a bit of a crazy mess, which is fun. And he's retired. So basically he's like Batman from The Dark Knight Rises, but his version of it. And he does this whole fight sequence in the beginning where, with this broom, where he's kicking out the Flash's butt that's depowered. And the other guy doesn't know what to do with his flash. He's the doppelganger. It's the Flash's powers, and because they had to reenact that, his origin by getting shot with the lightning and the chemicals. So yeah, there's a lot going on, a lot of stuff going on in this. And Batman talks about Bruce Wayne talks about how the timelines, everything became spaghettified when he went back in time. And it's a good metaphor. Is it enough to explain everything in this movie? Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, basically is what it is. Bowl spaghetti. And it was fun. It was fun. Like every scene that Keaton's in, he steals. And he's 100% committed. I love it. It's neat to see more of this, his version of Batman again after so long. That was a lot of fun. And the stuff that he has in it, like his Batwing, his new and improved Batwing, is awesome. Like the middle of it rotates, and it's just he can do more things with it. Eject people out of the bottom. He can what else? He's got some other kind of missiles on there that he messes up some people with. So the old tech, like he has like a BlackBerry or something in it that he uses to, they got to go save Supergirl in Russia. And that's one of the things about this. Like they get to Russia in like 2 seconds. Like it's like, I'm serious. Like they get in the Batwing, and about the next scene later, it's like, okay, we're here. Like, what did I miss? I know Gotham City is over the ocean, you know. Like around New York City, you know. Oh wait, we're here. That would take a long time, but I don't know what they did. The bad engine, I don't know. But there's some good stuff. They break Supergirl out of her prison, and she gets her powers back as soon as they get her in the sun. She rejuvenates, which was cool. A nice reminder there of that why Superman needs the sun, and or somebody from that from Krypton would. Yeah, it was very good, and that part. And even though it is very CG, and there's a whole big fight scene on the top of this prison thing, and inside the prison, and Batman uses some of his lines to get everybody out of the underground prison silo. And yeah, he's just got a lot of bat tech, which is fun. It reminds me of the first two movies. And the lines he uses are like, let's get nuts. It's like from Batman 1, you know, and how much do you weigh? You know, he uses that. And the bat grappling hook, it's all good. So they meet up, and they have to stop Zod from trying to take over Earth, or no, get the DNA or something from her, which he succeeds at doing. And Batman tries to stop Zod's men. And I thought this was great, because this is the first time you see Batman, the Keaton Batman, versus a suit, you know, basically a extraterrestrial super villain, which we never got those in the first two Batman movies or any of the Batman movies. I'm trying to think, even with the exception of the Batfleck, you know, in Justice League and all that. So this is cool. And he's able to take one of them out by planting bombs on his chest. And the guy, I know it's not Keaton fighting for most of the scenes, but the guy they get to replace him is perfect. Like, he's the right height and weight, and he does these kicks and it and everything. It's awesome. It's fun to watch. But the CG of him, like, floating around, it's fun, but it's like, you know what? He should be practical as possible. Like, everything should be really happening with him, you know, with maybe a couple shots here. Like, there's a shot where he has to jump out of the Batwing, and his cape helps him fall through the air, you know. That was great. You know, that looked good. So there are some shining moments of CG when Supergirl takes Flash that needs to be electrocuted again to get his power back. She brings him into the air. I thought that was good. So there's a few shining moments there. But anyway, so there's a whole big thing where they're fighting Zod's men, and they keep losing. And the one thing I thought was missing was, well, you used Danny Elfman's score. Why not use Hans Zimmer's score from Man of Steel to contrast that? You know, I would have done that. And then have the composer mix the two somehow. That would have been neat. So that's a missed opportunity. And that's the thing. There's a lot of missed opportunities here. You could cross Batman where somehow the Keaton Batman has to meet up with Affleck's Batman or whomever. You know, I mean, if you compare this to Spider-Man No Way Home, I think you'll be a little disappointed. Because No Way Home, it got you in the feels a lot more. But this is more, this is good too. This is good nostalgia feels. But especially there's just a lot of cameos in this. And spoilers right now for cameos. They bring in Christopher Reeve and Helen Slater as Supergirl, and they get them together. Now, it's fun, you know, because they're having like a multiple worlds collision and all that. And both of the Barrys have to fight Evil Barry. Like, I forgot what his name is in this. But it's like a Flash that lost his mind trying to save everybody going back. And which is a very much a Flash kind of story. You know, I'm sure I've read that or seen that story somewhere in the comics. And what else? What else? Yeah, we get the Nicolas Cage Superman. You know, it's like, but it's done so badly as far as their face looks and everything. Like, they could have got Nicolas Cage. I'm sure you'd be up for it. Like, all right, you need me in a scene? Let's suit up. I'll do it. I'll perform it. And then, you know, they want to de-age him. They could de-age him a little bit, whatever. But he did just, it's like they're like, they took some likeness of him and they, without asking him, and they're like, let's do a video game version of this scene and have him fight a giant spider. And it was cool. It was a neat little scene. And it always makes you wonder. It's like, oh, that went how, what a weird Superman that would have been. But yeah, I just don't. I don't know why they've been sitting on this movie for a while. There's really no excuse for the CG to be that bad, and especially in key moments like that. And the stylistic choice of the director, I didn't think there was nothing really about him that stood out style-wise to me. But maybe that's good. Maybe he wanted to get out of the way of the story, and it does have a good heart to it because he sympathizes for the character. He's trying to save his mom and do the right thing, but he's going back and forth like, well, yeah, but everyone, the whole universe will be destroyed. And now I got to save the whole universe now. And the thing is like the arc The arc is really Batman's, Keaton Batman's arc, because the Flash doesn't really learn at the end of the movie. He stops, he puts things back in place, and he goes back in time, and he allows for his mom to die, but he also allows for his dad to get out of jail. So he changes, he still changes the past. So he still doesn't quite really learn that, hey, I need to leave. I have to reset everything. So he didn't really learn. So his arc is that he didn't overcome that. And Keaton has more of an arc like, well, he's retired, let other people do it. I tried to change everything. I can never answer. I can never fully scratch that itch by putting all the criminals in jail and all that. But he comes out of retirement, basically, and he's given another reason to exist as Batman. And so he thanks Flash at the end of his scene there after he's dying for helping to give him purpose again. And I thought that it was really touching. It was really touching. And it was sad that Batman kept dying in it, and Supergirl kept dying. They're stuck in a loop. And no matter what the Flash did to change things, they always died. So, which brings you to the climax of the movie. They have to fight the evil version of the Flash that tried to change everything. And what's his name? The doppelganger, Barry, ends up dying. And it's sad. It's a sad moment. And, everything gets set, kind of right, but not really. Because he comes back to his own universe, Barry Allen, and he's like, goes back to the courthouse, and they let his dad off because they could tell all the videos changed, and his dad looks up into the camera and it's his dad. So they know that's his, alibi, is that he didn't murder his wife and all that. So we never find out who murdered Barry's mom and all that. There's some mystery there. And basically, at the end, Barry Allen talks to Batman, and Batman shows up in this car, or Bruce Wayne does, but Bruce Wayne, all the reporters are around him, and then he gets out of the car, and it's spoilers. It's a George Clooney Batman, which is pretty great. Which, I got a soft spot for George Clooney. I like Batman and Robin, although I know it's a mess. It would have been great if he took out the, there's a line like, I'm a bit short on cash, and I know I'm in my credit cards, and then George Clooney would take out his bat card. Say, don't worry, this one's on me. I never leave home without it. That would have been great, because if they're going to go full joke, they might as well go full joke and show you what really ruined that movie. But it's a funny way. So it kind of bookends the movie by silliness. So, the nostalgia, I'd say I'm biased on that, and the Batman stuff that wants to give it a 9, but I can't give it a 9 because there's too many little flaws in it along with the CG. I'll give it an 8, which is still pretty good. An 8 out of 10 is a good, solid score. A lot of people are giving this movie a 7, which I understand. But that makes it, I'd say if you gave it a 7 out of 10, that's kind of a, it's kind of like, there's something, this is flawed, but it's still fun. To me, it's good. It's a good movie because it's got a good heart to the story. But it has a few things where it's like, they missed some opportunities, and the CG was bad. Now when they recast Flash, I hope we get like the Flash from the comics. I hope we get a little bit more, you know, I hope we get, let's just say, I hope we get a Flash that can run, that looks better in his running. I get where Ezra was going for. I think he was doing something really out of the box where it's like, well, you know, he researched it. So I got to give him some respect for that. Well, I don't want to give him respect for anything, honestly, but for that, he was, I think he looked into some kind of Olympic running or something like this is how they run. And, but it looks pretty silly on film how he runs. Like Steven Seagal looks better running than he does. But you go with it. You go with it. Looking forward to the, you know, it's too bad Ezra Miller made the decisions he made in his personal life. I think it's nobody needs to act like that. Okay. Nobody. All right. When you threaten people, when you do things that are really bad, the other stuff, it's no excuse. Let's get somebody else in there. And that's unfortunate. I don't like judging people. I'm not a perfect person, but there's gotta be a line. And, those are the consequences. And, he needs to calm his ass down and get back to reality here and understand that the world is more than just him, and he affects people with his actions. And hey, you know, Hambo ain't perfect, absolutely not. But we all have to check ourselves sometimes. Anyway. Moving along, that's my review. Hope you liked it. Again, great seeing Keaton as Batman. I wish we got a third Batman movie with Keaton. I feel that we kind of got robbed that, and that's unfortunate. And it sucks that the Batman Keaton dies in this too. That sucked. I would have liked to see Henry Cavill and Superman in that too, but that just didn't happen. So I don't know. Warner Brothers just really hates Cavill for some reason. I think it's kind of dumb. But anyway, I guess that brings me into comics. I've been reading The Hunt for Wolverine lately, and I've been reading it, unfortunately, on my Kindle because honestly, I don't have room for books anymore and comic books. I've hit my limit. I've gone over my limit, and that's the thing with comic books and books in general. If you go over your limit, you know, it's no good. You know, it's, you just can't keep storing stuff, and unless you get rid of some stuff, and I don't want to get rid of that much to make room for the new stuff. So I've been reading on my Kindle, and it crosses over other titles like Daredevil, and it's fine. You know, there's some good scenes, like they bring back Albert, which is like the Terminator version of Wolverine. There's during the Mark Silvestri run in the 90s, they had him team up with this robot, a little girl or something, Elsa D. And it was like they're a fun kind of partner group, buddy team, comedy buddy team. It was kind of nutty. But a lot of it, they're searching for him. It gets a little boring. So I'm hoping that the story picks up. It's a pretty big story. It's cool to take it panel by panel. There's some benefits by reading comics in a Kindle panel to panel, so you don't see what's coming up. That's nice. But there's no doubt having an actual comic book in your hands is the ideal way to read the comic. Or a book in general, I think. It's just that there's an aesthetic feel to having a book physically in your hand, and the visual and the feel and the smell of a book. It's nice. Okay. You're never going to get rid of that. So that's what I've been reading there. Next, I'm looking at reading Swamp Thing, the Alan Moore run. So yeah, looking forward to that. So Rage 4.5, I'm working on that. I'm in the second page. It's coming along. I'm getting more thumbnails done here and there. So I'm sticking to about one or two thumbnails per page. The first page, I did about 4 thumbnails, but I'm not going to do so many thumbnails per page. If I think I got the page looking pretty good, that's what I'm going to stick with for the sake of speeding things along. I'm also scoring a short film using GarageBand that I shot on my phone. So I'm doing a little short film there. And that's what's going on there. You can still check out Rage 4, of course, and Rage 1 to 3 over at IndiePlanet.com. As always, I'll put the link at the bottom of the description. Let me go into a story I just read from Missing 411. I wanted to read a story. And I thought this was good. I spent some time in New York and Vermont. And I'll read you a case from the Albany area, which was interesting to me. So this is a Missing 411, a sobering coincidence by David Pilates. And it's creepy because it's definitely, I know this neck of the woods where this guy went missing, and it's sad. And it makes me thank my lucky stars that I wasn't taken. So, his name, this guy's name is Josh Zostak. And he's 21 years old. He disappeared in 2007 in Albany, New York. It's unusual when I write about a really high-profile public figure, or locally. Josh Zostak would be considered that person. He was the lead disc jockey at a popular student-run radio station in Plattsburgh, New York. I spent a lot of time working in the Plattsburgh area. WQKE. Josh was a student at Plattsburgh State College, but then he transferred to Hudson Valley Community College in Troy. And I lived right next to that city, Troy. And I dealt with a lot of people that went to that college there. He told friends that he was planning to return to Plattsburgh the following semester. On December 21st, 2007, Josh called his dad and told him he was meeting friends at a downtown Albany bar for a night of partying. Bill Zostak, Josh's dad, is a retired arson investigator. He and Josh had a close relationship and talked regularly. Josh drove to Albany and parked his vehicle outside the Elbow Room at 170 Delaware Avenue in Albany. I'm sure I've walked over there. I don't know if I've been in that place. Probably not. He met with friends and they moved on to the Bayou Cafe at 79 Pearl Street in Albany. Now, this Pearl Street is, it's downtown area there. You get the Capitol building and all that historic downtown. And there's some, on the street, there's a few bars and everything. And I might even have been in this cafe. I definitely have seen it. Josh, you know, there's like the main expressway that goes through this whole downtown area. And on each side, there's like different bars. Let's see here. Josh told his buddy he's going to the restroom. On the Time Warner Cable News Service channel had the following. His friends said they waited about 45 minutes. They were texting him, searching around. They went to the bathroom, and Zostak, Bill, through the surveillance video at the Bayou, we could see that Josh bypassed them all. Went outside, used his cell, looked up and down the street, and couldn't see anybody. He decided his friends left and started hoofing it towards his car, where his car was. Josh never made it to his car. It was found exactly where he left it. Josh was never seen alive again. There were several video cameras monitoring the fronts of businesses and the sidewalk along the route Josh was walking. He was observed on camera in the area of North Pearl and State Streets, minutes after leaving the area of the cafe. This is significant as it's exactly in opposite direction of where he was eventually found. And there's no additional footage of him traveling in any other direction. And there should have been. Now, I'll tell you, Albany is like a police state. There's a lot of cops. So I'm really surprised that this went down where there's a lot of police in this city. Josh Zostock was reported as a missing person and a sustained search of over 2 weeks was started. K-9s were brought into the area and there was where he was last seen and led in a direction away from his car. Another Time Warner Cable news article on February 28, 2015 described the following strange coincidence in this case. There still is an element of the case that continued to mystify anyone involved. The same night Josh disappeared, a Department of Conservation vehicle was left damaged and abandoned at the Port Street of Albany. It had been stolen from a downtown garage, steps where Josh's cell phone was found. Albany police believe that there's connection, although they lack the evidence to support that theory. Josh was initially listed as a suspect in the theft that was later recanted. Police could not find Josh's fingerprints or DNA in the stolen car. Yeah, definitely doubt that he robbed anything. He did that. The town of Albany was turned upside down by police. During their search effort, they found nothing other than the cell phone near the location where the car was stolen. Because the car was found in the port of Albany, adjacent to the Hudson River. Yeah, Hudson River cuts through this big time. The police put divers into the water. The search was thorough and not productive. On January 10th, 2008, the divers, I wasn't there. I was still in California at the time. The divers stopped searching the Hudson River and terminated the efforts to locate Josh. There were very few developments in Josh's case until April 22, 2008. A boater was on the Hudson River, 24 miles south of Albany in Coxsackie, New York. They found a body in the water. It was Josh. Rescue crews found Josh's keys and money on his body. The medical examiner determined that Josh died accidentally from drowning. His blood alcohol level was listed at 0.128%. That level of intoxication would not be considered debilitating. You would be too drunk to drive at 0.126%, but not in danger to yourself or others. Bill Sostak has always believed there was foul play in Josh's death. The family hired renowned physician Dr. Michael Badden to perform a second autopsy. Dr. Badden came to the same conclusions of the first autopsy. He did add that he didn't know how Josh got into the water or the circumstances surrounding his death. I couldn't locate specific details from the autopsy report. I couldn't. It's important to understand the entire picture of this incident. Josh was last seen in the area of 79 Pearl Street in the downtown area of Albany. The stolen car was found at the port of Albany, approximately 2 miles south of the Pearl Street location. If Josh took a direct route from the last location he was seen, it is only 500 feet east from the Hudson River. One caveat to this mental map, his phone's location. It is mere coincidence the number of is it mere coincidence the number of times the victim's body is found and the cell phone is not with the body? The Corning City Preserve in a semi-rural area directly in the route he would have had to take if he went directly to the river from the Pearl Street location. It's very hard to understand how Josh ended up in the Hudson. He didn't have any injuries indicative of a fight. On a cold December night, it's hard to believe that anyone would voluntarily enter the icy waters. Absolutely. Especially in Albany. Heck no, it gets cold there. A significant point that readers need to remember. This is another incident where the victim somehow avoided the detection of video cameras to arrive at their demise. The last place that Josh was caught on video would have been a location that no matter where he went next, he should have been caught on video, but he wasn't. Yeah, and I never see the cameras downtown either. They do a good job of hiding those. Bill Zostak appeared on CNN and spoke about the facts of his son's death. I also believe that there was foul play in Josh's case, just as there had been in each of these incidents. There comes a point where each of us must say that the coincidences end and foul play comes into the picture. You may not have reached that point yet. And the updated Time Warner article I quoted earlier was his final statement from Bill Zostak. Was this final statement. Josh would never say goodbye. Josh would end every conversation saying, peace. Zostak recalls, he was the best son you could have. Sad. Very sad. Somebody's got things going for him. And that's what happens. Which is a lot of this book. There's a lot of students that are smart, that stand out. And they get taken. And there you go. There's the missing 411. A sobering coincidence. Story of the day. You can find all those books. If you go to Can-Am Missing Project, I believe it's .com, and you order from his website. The books are about $25 around there with shipping. Comes out to around 30-ish, 31 or something with shipping, but don't go on Amazon because there's a bunch of people trying to rip people off charging hundreds of dollars for these books. And with that, I will leave you all. Have a great day. Or a great night whenever you listen to this. May you have long days and pleasant nights. Hambo out.